Okay, quiet on the set, everybody. Stand by. Roll camera. Speed. Roll sound.
Speed.
Mark it. And cue talent.
Hello and welcome. I'm your host, Art Aldridge, and this week in production, it's all about NAB.
This week in production is produced by Art Aldridge. The thoughts and opinions expressed here are undoubtedly his own. You can reach Art at thisweekinproduction@gmail.com. This is Don McGee. To book me for voiceovers, please call 908-451-6760. Thanks.
I am in Las Vegas, on the Strip, at the world-famous but sort of run-down Planet Hollywood Hotel and Casino. Joining me tonight, Mr. Lou Lita.
Great to be back, Art. Live TWIP on the Strip. Yeah.
And also from Massachusetts, Mr. John Corrieri.
Yeah, I'm here.
Woo-hoo, Johnny C, as we like to call him.
It's the eve of the 2024 NAB show. This has become an annual gathering, I mean, for a long time, for me, I know for you, Lou. And mm-hmm. Johnny, how long have you been coming to NAB in one form or another?
Oh, boy. Probably about 15 years, maybe?
Yes.
Yeah.
Over 30 for me.
Yeah.
1992, first one.
Yeah, I've been coming somewhere in that range. I don't know that I've been to every NAB, but I've been to many.
I'd say at least 90s. Well over 20, 25 probably for me.
Many, many years we've all been working for different vendors as a booth help, consultants, whatever you want to call us. The last few years for me, it's not been just a job. It's been more of a discovery and information gathering, product evaluations, the things that most people normally would come to NAB for. It's a much different experience if you're an attendee than if you're working the show. But before we get into what you know you're expecting to see, what you're here to see, what you hope to see, let's just talk about where things are in the production space. I mean, we all have different sort of niches. We all work together on certain jobs, mm-hmm. but we all have different business clientele and different verticals that we're working in. It's been a strange, you know, 12 months and going forward now. It's been strange since last NAB.
It has. I mean, last year for me was pretty busy, but I did notice a lot of my commercial work had started to decline. You know, and technology is obviously changing, you know, with iPhones and AI and, you know, so many people in the business now. It's, you know, and then of course last year there was a discussion of a recession. So there was a little hesitancy, I think, on some people's part to spend money. But then it seems like that sort of died off, and then all of a sudden, I think I've recently gotten more busy in the last 6 weeks or so after a slow start. So,
how does it look from your vantage point, John, about the business environment and production and things from this past year?
Yeah, I think I've noticed a little bit of lull. Obviously, we had a big union, strike. So that kind of put a little damper on the whole momentum, I think, and, you know, production and companies, camera companies. I think it kind of put a little halt on things.
That's a good point. Didn't even consider that.
Yeah. So I think that's why the beginning of the year was kind of like a little slow, you know. I think there are other talks, too, about negotiations right now that might have another strike. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I think that affects everything else too, even, you know, people that are not in union work or it lowers the buzz in the industry. You know?
Right, right. And I would say from my vantage point, which is mostly corporate clientele, corporations have definitely cut back. I know my main account, they're definitely cutting the number of events that we're doing. They're cutting headcounts on events that we're doing. Things that were perennial sort of evergreen for a long, long time have now been cut down, and they're looking really to cut, you know, every aspect of it, travel, you know, no secondary travel days if we can avoid it, things like that, things that were never even asked before. And the reason I ask this is because for me, it has an impact on what I come to NAB and what I'm looking to potentially spend money on. Because if there's not a business need for gear, it does affect, you know, what I'm obviously looking for. So let's start with you, Lou. What are you looking for? What are you expecting to see? What are you interested in seeing?
You know, as far as cameras go, I'm status quo with cameras. I don't really have some burning desire for any new camera.
Your current camera arsenal is what?
I'm still using the Panasonic EVA 1, which is still a workhorse for me. I do all my interviews, a lot of corporate and commercial work with that camera. I've used the Lumix S5 2X for the last year, which has been a great camera for me for gimbal work, for B-roll, using it on a small jib. So that's been a fantastic camera for me. You know, I'm set for lenses. I would say if there was one thing I'm looking to do is come up with some solution for traveling with lights, because I have done a fair amount of corporate talking head type shoots, and I need a low, small footprint for my lights. So I'm sure we're going to see a lot of that, you know, LEDs and all kinds of companies. And we've seen that the last few years, but I'm looking for small, compact lights. So that's probably my number one desire this year.
How about you, Johnny? What are you expecting to see, interested in seeing? You know, what is maybe, you know, you have an eye on as a potential purchase?
Yeah, I think I said this last NAB we did a podcast. I was talking about Blackmagic, and I have to say it again. They're the only one that's really kind of opening your eyes to, oh, I'm going to go check that out again this year, because they have so much new stuff coming out.
It is true. Blackmagic had a pre-NAB press conference. You know, we're recording this on Saturday evening. They had their press conference on Friday. They announced, I think it was like over 40 new products. A lot of them are the glue or infrastructure pieces. A lot of it has to do with SMPTE 2110, which is you know, NDI in a broadcast form. But there are some new cameras. There are things that I wasn't expecting Blackmagic to see. From my personal vantage point, though, I am also not interested in necessarily new cameras, at least not in the standard form factors. My Varicam LTs are, you know, still running strong, great pictures, very happy with the workflow, the ecosystem, the durability on those cameras has been great. There's just no business case for me to look for another cinema camera. What has really caught my eye is this iPhone, you know, shooting video using the Blackmagic camera app, which is a free app. And then Tilt has got this ecosystem they're developing, which is a cage and a heat sink and then connection points, quarter 20s, cold shoes, and a power mechanism built into the handle, and then the ability to put a Bluetooth Nucleus follow focus on the rig and be able to control the phone at a very deep level. And Michael Cioni, who you might know from many previous ventures, he was involved with Frame.io, he was involved with Camera to Cloud, he was involved with some color workflows using different ACES, technology. Well, he's got this new company called Strata, which is like a cloud-based system, and it can take the iPhone camera data, the depth mapping, and it has the ability to put in film grain and selective shallow focus in post. And so this workflow is very interesting to me, not because I need, you know, a way to shoot on a phone. But I think for some jobs, especially at this time when people are looking to cut budgets, I could roll in with six phones in a single Pelican case And if their sole purpose is to be a video camera and I have the tools to shoot, you know, in a ProRes format and have time code sync and all these things, it may be viable.
But let me ask you, is this a novelty thing? Is it just because it can do it, we should do it? I mean, why is there all this focus on the phone versus, like, I mean, there's lots of other tools out there that can be modified and, you know, have be built out with cages and whatnot. And again, I'm not like for or against this. I'm just, it's more of a curiosity.
It's a form factor. It's a price, and it's a ability to, like I say, roll in with a very small form factor. You know, the nice thing about the iPhone as a camera is it's all self-contained pretty much.
True.
Even if you put a rig on it, like the monitor is already there, you know, the lens is there, you know, you put a couple little pieces on and it's something, I've got cameras that obviously can do a much better job. I don't need the iPhone to replace my Varicam.
I mean, do you feel like there will be any perception issues of using a phone as a production tool?
I think once you kit it out and I don't think my client would have any problem with it, but I think once you kit it out, because I've tested it. I did a shoot a while back, and it was just something I was experimenting with. And I put the iPhone in a cage on a slider, and I had the slider starting on a monitor shot of the feed of my A camera and then sliding off to see the set with the talent on it in a wider frame. And I just wanted to see what the iPhone could do with its own, you know, sort of fake bokeh-ness, mm-hmm. and pulling focus automatically. And it did a remarkable job. It picked up the face on the monitor and it would pull the focus very smoothly as it went to the monitor and as it went back and it picked up the other face. So, you know, it's impressive technology. Say what you will about the sensor size, and there's definitely limitations. But again, for certain situations, it's something that I would consider. I'd have no hesitation if I thought it would work professionally. I think this Tilta tool and the Blackmagic tool and this Strata software, I think, could give me an ecosystem where it actually makes a lot of sense. And part of what, you know, Blackmagic is showing in their cameras now is the ability to hook up, you know, network 10 gigabit network ports and then have it go to their Blackmagic cloud. Well, heck, if you have iPhones and they're on cellular, this footage that you're shooting can be uploaded as you're shooting.
True. That's,
I mean, if you think about it, like, not that I'm looking to eliminate the DIT position, but in some circumstances, the cameras are uploading essentially when the clip is done recording, and it's in the cloud, and people can start working on it.
What about security, though? Like, with clients?
Security from what standpoint?
From, you know, the client's footage, basically shooting it on the phone.
I mean, that could potentially be an issue. Like, if it was, you're saying if it's going into the cloud to sync?
Yes.
Right. But I think because of Apple's ecosystem, it is all encrypted. I don't think there's any really big security issues. But if it was something that was, you know, trade secret or product launch, you know, maybe it's not the right thing to do. But again, like, my particular clients don't necessarily have that need. But I'm not sure how to answer that from a, like, true security standpoint. But I'm pretty sure Apple's iCloud itself is secure and encrypted end-to-end. So I don't think it would be an issue, but I don't know for certain.
Could you foresee Apple coming out with a higher end cinema camera using any of their camera technology from the iPhone?
I don't think so. I don't think that's Apple's market. I think Apple's quite happy to sell phones. And, you know, the cameras are only going to get better. What they're doing already is pretty remarkable from just a phone and a camera technology standpoint. So I think it's only going to get better only for them to sell more phones.
Mm.
But if I can go and buy a camera for $1,000 that lets me do, you know, all of this advanced technology processing, and I can, you know, get six of them, put them in one little Pelican carry-on, and that's the whole kit. I mean, think about what I don't need to drag, which is big tripods and, you know, big lenses and big mat boxes. Mm. And, you know, this Kronos thing does have some neat things, like the ability to put neutral densities over the lens array on the back of the phone. And
what about additional lenses?
There are. I have not looked into, you know, the iPhone as far as a real camera using, you know, lenses. I know they're out there. Mm. I don't really know if they're any good. I know people talk about them, but I would definitely suggest you check out this Strata thing. There's a whole bunch of content on YouTube. I'm sure they're going to be at NAB. It'll be one of the booths that I'm going to look forward to seeing. And they're doing all kinds of other AI stuff. And, you know, that's all things that I'm also looking at for workflow, right? Is how to be more efficient, because if the budgets are getting cut, the more efficient I can be, you know, the more money I put in my pocket.
True.
What other business disruptors have you come into in the past 12 months? Anything that's been very disruptive for business from a technology standpoint?
I mean, obviously some of this AI footage that has come out recently, it seems interesting, especially like in the stock footage realm. You know, some audio enhancement tools. I know I'm a Premiere guy, and they've come out with some really good audio features that allow you to take terrible audio, clean it up, and make it sound incredibly.
Are you using any of these in your?
I'm using like the newest version of Premiere is using audio enhancement, which has got some really powerful tools.
So is that disrupting anything in your, like, are you not hiring professional sound guys because you have these abilities?
I mean, it's allowing me to do, you know, to clean up a lot of audio that I may not have been able to otherwise. And then even like in the voiceover world, like the AI voiceovers are starting to become very, very good. You know, and I do still hire a lot of professional voiceovers, and I have not actually used AI VO talent yet, but I'm hearing some of it, and it's pretty good. So I only imagine it's going to get better. And I don't know what that means in terms of the cost, or, I mean, I'm not going to just give it away, but like, what does that mean for a professional voiceover talent? I don't know. I mean, it seems like it would affect them.
In, yeah, definitely.
It would affect
to their margin.
What are you seeing as you know, business disruptors, John?
I think it's, you know, these companies and really, you know, hunkering down. I guess it's because of the economy. Like you said, it's like they're really looking at things, and usually, you know, their marketing departments or media departments, those are usually the first things that go out of their budgets, because they just think that's the first thing they can let go. So, you know, laying off, you know, other employees. But I just feel like they're holding on to their what they can right now. And I think that's just the world we're living in right now, the time. So I think that once they tighten up, it affects all of us, you know. I know the beginning of the new year, it was crickets, you know. Last year was great. I had a really good year last year, but the beginning of this year is just taking forever to get going. You know, I got some things booked, but they're down the road, you know?
And I'm assuming that's going to obviously impact your, you know, purchasing decisions for things you might be looking at NAB. Like, are there things that you're looking at that you're like, oh, you know, maybe this is not the year to, you know, invest in new equipment. I'm going to wait on whatever you might be looking for.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's like when the industry, you know, tightens up a little bit, then it forces us to tighten up, you know, because I like to invest, especially after doing taxes and in the new year, that tells me, oh, now I can put more money back into the business. And now I'm looking at that, you know, equipment-wise and saying, nope, I'm not spending the money. I'm holding on to it, you know, almost like rainy day. stuff. So it kind of slows the industry because now, you know, I don't think there's any company out there that's really doing what they can right now, like profit wise. I don't think anybody's like really big, like in the, you know, back in the day where companies, Sony, you know, Panasonic, you know, they were making money like crazy. I don't think that's happening right now. You know, it's kind of like
I think it's a tough, you know, broadcast companies, you know, electronics companies, it's thin margins these days, and they have to basically come out with something that's a hit or it's going to die on the vine very, you know, quickly. And I certainly, you know, wouldn't want to be a manufacturer of gear.
No.
Yeah. I think they're catering. I don't know if you guys seen this. It's a lot of the YouTube. It's the YouTubers. It's the influencers.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and, you know, they're shooting this stuff in the corner of their room. They're putting that colored gel in the back, and they're getting all this video gear from all the manufacturers, you know, just to test. But I see so much of that kind of video content, you know.
But it's not by accident. I mean, people are consuming it.
Oh yeah,
and there's a market for it. There's revenue behind it. So, I mean, as much as it's not what we've been working at for the past, you know, 30 something years of our careers, I mean, it is definitely shifting that way. And it's all about, you know, I see YouTube. I watch a lot of YouTube. If I hadn't mentioned that before, but you see all these YouTubers and they wear those lavalier, you know, battery pack.
Yep. Big chunky clunky,
you know, DJI transmitters. Yeah. Yep. And I'm like, you know, who's green lighting that idea? Like, let's wear a giant transmitter on our chest, you know, and not have a true lavalier mic or a true boom mic. It's just ridiculous, but it doesn't matter. People are consuming the content either
cares.
Way. And if you can get it done and you don't spend, I mean, what was a good Lectrosonic, you know, RF microphone system? It was probably $5,000, you know, a few years ago, and maybe it still is. I don't know. I haven't bought one in a while, but no one's going to spend that money for a YouTube channel. I mean, unless you're Marquise Brownlee or one of these big multi-million-dollar, you know, operations where he can buy, you know, cinema robots that cost, you know, $1 million. Like, he doesn't care.
But it's always been about the content, right? And in my world, you know, I still do a lot of work in the television world, which is shrinking. I mean, I work in Boston. I deal with a lot of TV stations. I deal with their sales staff. You know, a lot of their salespeople are leaving. Their in-house production staffs are shrinking, if not going away. You know, there are less advertisers. And if they are advertising, they don't want to spend a ton of money on it. So everyone's working a little bit harder. And rarely do I ever have anyone ask me for specific gear. You know, they just want what they want. They want a good production, a good commercial, a good something effective. They don't want to spend a lot of money. And that's been sort of my model for years anyway. So none of this is really different to me. It's just trying to give, you know, good quality production at a, you know, a decent rate, and they win and I win. And it's more of a volume business in that sector for me. So, it's very rare anyone's asked me, when you want to shoot a commercial and it needs to be on a Sony camera, you know, they might ask me, oh, do you have a Red? You know, just because they've heard that, you know, word or whatnot. But it's not my world. You know, I understand when you're dealing with agencies, you know, they may have a specific look thereafter, but, and that does happen occasionally, but it's more about the content. It's more about the creative in my world.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely the case, I think, for most clientele. Now, I think under some circumstances, there's, as you said, John, the appearance of your system, and it evokes a certain quality level, I think, for some people. I think, though, that's a shrinking segment of the production world, and it's just going to be whatever it takes to get the job done. If it, you know,
I mean, look, you've got you know, we're all into golf. I mean, like, golfers are shooting a lot of their own videos now, or their, you know, their caddies are shooting them, and they're, you know, getting thousands and thousands of views. So it's like, it's again, personalities, it's content, it's charisma, it's creativity. Like, no one's sitting there going, you know, that golfer didn't use a higher end camera. You know, a lot of times it's just camera mic off of a phone. So I find all this fascinating. Again, it's, there's different levels of approaching.
I think, you know, you say that, and I don't have all the specs on it, but I know that the NHL just did a production of a hockey game, and they used a virtual control room.
Really?
Yes. So it was a live, you know, hockey. I don't know if it was a tournament or just a single game, but they used, you know, a cloud-based control room. And, you know, the replays and all that were done, you know, not in a truck or not in a building. They were all, you know, remote workforce. And honestly, that is a trend that I think is only going to increase. You're going to see live television events being covered in a way that there's very few people on site. Incredible. And possibly even the commentators not being on site.
Well, I think that happened during COVID. I mean, a lot of the commentators did not travel with teams.
It did.
And they were doing it from a studio. Mm.
Yeah, one of the previous TWIP episodes, I had a guy, Lowell Thayer, on, who was doing basically this idea of covering golf tournaments with cameras were only being fed back on live view units. And he had a central control room in Florida, but the events could have been anywhere in the country, and he was having a very small footprint on the ground. And that's only now, I think, going to, you know, multiply as, you know, budgets are being cut, advertising is being cut, every, you know, sports rights are increasing in price, but the revenue is not coming in for ads. So they have to find a way to...
They can't make more, they can... save more.
They have to save more. And I honestly mean, say whatever you will, it's a changing tide. And either you're going to be in it, riding the wave, or you're going to be under it, drowning.
Doing something else.
Yeah. So, okay. So it'll be interesting to see. We're going to follow up in a couple of days after we've spent two days at the show. And we'll get on the TWIP microphones again, and we'll report back about what we've seen, what looks interesting, what looks shoddy, what's getting some buzz that maybe doesn't deserve it. And we'll report back. So for now, I'm Art.
I'm Lou.
And I'm John.
And we'll see you next time.